All right, the time is 2 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Good morning to all the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are tuning in from. So this is early morning scoop. This is a program where is where we provide you with the latest update on the economy, entrepreneurship, public policy. That's what we give you until the hour of 7:30. And I'm Lois Shimi. Now, before we give you the usual update internationally, please do not forget to connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Virgin Square page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and newspaper alerts. And don't forget to also download the Eagle FM app that's available on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store, just to make sure that you stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are. And, of course, you can also able to listen to past shows just through the app. There are a lot of now the podcasts are lined up for you just to go listen there. Yeah, and to start off internationally is that the Minister of Tourism, Patricia, says that the under the firm Solidarity, Equality, Sustainability, South Africa G20 Tourism Working Group will position South Africa's tourism industry on a global stage by also creating investment, enhancing air connectivity, and developing inclusive and sustainable tourism policies across the world.
Tourism Working Group aims to position tourism as a driver of economic, social, and environmental change. The working group will also explore the potential of tourism to support economic recovery and the transition to a green economy. There are four priority areas: people-centered artificial intelligence and innovation to enhance travel and tourism, tourism financing and investment to enhance equality, and the promotion of sustainable development and air connectivity for seamless travel.
South Africa's G20 presidency highlights our commitment to tourism, innovation, investment, and also enhancing air connectivity and developing inclusive and sustainable tourism practices. So far, and for the rest of the year, we will be hosting more than 130 G20-related meetings across our country, providing unparalleled opportunities to showcase our country, our venues, our facilities, the business collaboration, because all of this in the end is contributing to job creation and also drive investment.
The G20 Tourism Working Group coincides with the 2025 Africa Travel Indaba, taking place in Durban this week. This year's Indaba welcomes over 1,300 exhibitors and delegates from 27 African countries and more than 1,200 international buyers.
In 2024, the Africa Travel Indaba generated 226 million rand in direct economic activity in Durban and in the province, and an additional 333 million across the KwaZulu-Natal province. It has also created more than 1,000 jobs through the event. We've seen more than 120 micro, small, medium enterprises that were also given a platform to engage with global buyers with the direct market access support from the Department of Tourism.
The working group is also expected to also highlight challenges and progress made in the tourism sector across the globe. For SABC News, I am Jade.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that South Africa's leading HIV and AIDS program faces a major setback after the Trump administration cut $400 million in PEPFAR funding. Now the suspension has led to clinics closing, displaced 15,000 health workers and disrupt care for millions.
World's largest and most comprehensive HIV-AIDS program supporting over 8 million people. but the abrupt suspension of $400 million in annual PEPFAR funding by the Trump administration has closed clinics, displaced 15,000 health workers, and disrupted care, putting pregnant women and newborns at renewed risk of infection and preventable death. This clinic in Guguleto was once a lifeline in South Africa's HIV response, but today it's eerily quiet. Testing rooms are closed, staff gone. It's one of many facilities that has been hard hit by the sudden withdrawal of U.S. funding. This maternity unit once relied on PEPFAR-funded counselors. Now, with those roles gone, even basic testing for expectant mothers is a challenge.
Our patients are suffering, and the cut has done so much damage that we are not able to follow through our patients. Imagine if you no longer get your treatment, your HIV treatment, and it's going to cause a lot of damage in your body, and you end up dying.
You'll start to see the ripple effects quite fast. For Africa and South Africa specifically, we have high levels of HIV. We have TB infections, which we know escalates. And so my message would be that ultimately we shouldn't be looking at the money. It's about looking at lives, looking at livelihoods, looking at babies who would lose their mothers to HIV if moms don't get cared for.
To understand just how deep the damage goes, I met with Professor Landon Meyer at the University of Cape Town. For over 25 years, the university has been at the forefront of global HIV/AIDS research.
Overnight, in many instances, entire sections of our HIV care and treatment services have been removed. They've been deleted from existence. People literally received their job notices and were fired over weekend. And the impact of this is something that we're only even beginning to get a sense of.
Thanks to PEPFAR-backed programs, South Africa had reduced mother-to-child HIV transmission from 30% to under 1%, a milestone now under threat.
We will see, inevitably now, more pediatric HIV infections. And over time, over the next few months and years, we'll see more adult HIV deaths. South Africa is, of course, well-resourced compared to other countries in the region. I think what we'll see globally is a resurgence of HIV, and with it a resurgence of TB.
Beyond clinics, cuts to the U.S. NIH funding have also frozen crucial HIV research, jeopardizing the search for new treatments, vaccines, and prevention strategies.
We have experiments that are taking place in the building behind us, for instance, and those studies are no longer operating. All the gains we've made in HIV over the last 20 or 30 years, they came through science. And now the next 30 years of gains have been eroded.
From life-saving treatment to critical research, South Africa's HIV fight is faltering, and without urgent intervention, the damage could become irreversible. The country has long been a global leader in HIV care and innovation, but as funding dries up, that progress and lives hang in the balance.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on into the next item is that in Nairobi, a monthly settlement, a volunteer program backed by Chinese civil society group is transforming lives, run by the Dream Building Service Association. It provides school renovations, meals, mentorship, and training to thousands of children.
Is Mathare informal settlement, where many families survive on less than a dollar a day. A unique volunteer initiative is bridging continents and changing lives. The program, which is run by the Dream Building Service Association and supported by Chinese civil society organizations and the China NGO Network for International Exchanges, offers school renovations, meals, mentorship, as well as training for thousands of children.
So far, we have renovated 7 schools, out of which 6 is in Mathare, and one of them is in Uganda, Kampala. And in total, we are supporting 5,000 students with the feeding program and covering about 30 to 40,000 people around the community.
The feeding program, which was started in 2014, is a lifeline for many in a community where most parents work hand-to-mouth jobs and putting food on the table remains a challenge.
This lunch program enables a parent, when he or she goes to work, she knows that my son, wherever he is, or my daughter, she'll get lunch without paying anything. So through that, at least we have reduced the burden from the parents.
During a recent event, Chinese NGOs and enterprises came together to see how their assistance has impacted lives and to also renew the commitment to the program.
So in the long run, we hope that with the help of the Chinese civil society, we can brought changes to the children. We can provide them more chances to have the access to education, and we can bring them food, we can bring them hope for the future.
Through arts, sports, and today's Silk Road People-to-People Connectivity Africa, China-Africa Friendship for International Volunteer Service, children are finding new purpose and staying in school.
The key thing, it has reduced crime in our area. It has also made children stick in school, because most of the time children, when they come to school and they have not taken breakfast and they will not take lunch, then the next thing, they will have to leave school or skip from school, go look for something to eat.
As the program expands across Africa, this people-to-people partnership continues to grow, yet another indicator that small acts of solidarity can shape a brighter future.
In a city where inequality and innovation live side by side, this collaboration offers a different kind of headline.
All right, the time is 14 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Cube. Now to move on to the next item is that the World Food Program has warned that a conflict, economic instability, and extreme weather are driving millions in West and Central Africa toward starvation.
Due to the World Food Program, over 50 million people across West and Central Africa will struggle to feed themselves in the coming months. According to the latest analysis by the WFP, more than 36 million people are struggling to meet their basic food needs. This number is projected to rise to over 52 million during the lean season from June to August. Nearly 3 million people are facing emergency levels of hunger. In Mali, people are reportedly at risk of catastrophic famine, the most severe classification of food insecurity. Meanwhile, relentless conflicts are said to have displaced 10 million people, leaving them without livelihoods or shelter. Other countries affected include Chad, Cameroon, Mauritania, Niger, and Nigeria. WFP says needs are at a historic high. Resources are limited, with millions of lives at stake. Recurring floods, droughts, and soaring food prices, worsened by climate shocks, are only eroding many families' ability to survive. The WFP warns that without urgent funding, life-saving aid will be slashed, forcing millions into a deeper humanitarian crisis. Daniel Arrow.
All right, now to move on to the next item in Zambia is that government says it is addressing the current power deficit by investing in alternative energy sources across the country. Now, the energy minister says government is currently rolling out a strategic plan that will ensure sustainable electricity supply.
...of power generation in the country being sourced from hydroelectricity. The recent drought experienced across the country has ushered in the need for alternative sources of power supply. In this light, government has allowed a partnership between a Turkish energy firm and a Zambian-based energy firm, GEI Choma Power Limited, to develop a 100-megawatt solar project in Choma District. Minister of Energy, Makoza Chikote, and Choma Central Member of Parliament Cornelius Mwetwa, joined by among them Speaker of the National Assembly Nelly Muti, graced the groundbreaking ceremony of this project.
The ministry, we have been directed to make sure that by the end of December 2025, we have to achieve the 1,000 megawatts for this country. The project demonstrates that government is walking the talk in attracting private sector investment in Zambia. We are winning the confidence of the investors in this country because of the reforms and policies that we have put in place. With such projects now in motion, we are not just beginning to move towards energy sufficiency and energy security. We are beginning to move towards the end of load shedding.
The Turkish government has reiterated its commitment to enhancing sustainable energy supply in Zambia.
The relations between Turkey and Zambia have grown stronger, particularly in political and economic spheres. And energy sector has emerged as a key area for cooperation, and we are committed in this.
The local leadership is pleased with this project and have a call.
Darumba Nova Company Russia Osongo Ikutmando Yumi Yamalaiti.
Now, to move on, the Rwandan government is moving vulnerable people into the planned settlement known as model villages. Now, those grouped villages are designed for the homeless and those living in high-risk zones prone to floods, landslides, and also other climate-related disasters. Now, so far, an estimated 62,000 rural families have been resettled.
On the night of May 6, 2018, Clavel Habamenshi's life took a dramatic turn. His house was reduced to rubble after a landslide triggered by heavy rains devastated this hillside neighborhood on the outskirts of the capital. Habamenshi's son was among the survivors rescued by emergency services. He was pulled from the wet debris along with his siblings and mother. But amid the turmoil, hope emerged as the government housing units neared completion, part of the initiative to provide free homes to vulnerable families. On July 2, 2019, Habamenshi and his family relocated to one of these newly built flats.
This is my house. Since I moved in, no one has charged me any rent fee. I'm even part of the community leadership. Coming here has been life-changing. My family is safe now. My focus is on building on what I have to improve our economic well-being even further.
Karama Integrated Model Village, located in Narujanja District, houses 240 households in 2- and 3-bedroom apartments, providing access to free education, healthcare, and income-generating activities such as poultry farming. This is one of the 124 model housing projects constructed across Rwanda and handed over at no cost to vulnerable citizens, including low-income families, widows, and persons with disabilities.
We make sure that those model villages have...
Those model villages have a nearby school, at least a 9-year basic education, a health post, playgrounds for kids, a market to start maybe some small income generating activities. So those are kind of the opportunities that are found in model villages that people couldn't find in their own homes. It's really making an impact, and some people have started upgrading their lives because they already have that safer environment they are living in.
The government of Rwanda is implementing a new approach to upgrade slums and high-risk zones into decent housing without relocating citizens to distant housing. Since 2017, the city of Kigali has been turning slums and unsafe urban areas into multi-story homes. The Mazi neighborhood was among the first to benefit. So far, 105 families have benefited from it. Another 688 families are expected to move in once construction is complete.
The Mazili housing project is kind of different.
The Mpazi housing project is kind of different from the Modo villages because in Mazi, we take land from the people, from the owners, and sometimes they have old houses on this land. And we evaluate the value of the land and the house, so we take the land, we build new houses, and when we finish building, we bring those people back. So the expropriation kind of equals of a new house in a new building.
The project features a mix of studio to 3-bedroom apartment, tailored to household size and families remain in their communities.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the South African manufacturing sector took a heavy hit in April, with the purchasing manager index falling 4%. point to 44.7 at the lowest level since November 2023, now marking the sixth straight month of decline. Now weakened domestic and export demand, now global tariff uncertainty, local political tensions and severe rainfall were cited as key factors. Now the new sales orders and business activity dropped sharply with employment decline and investors all rose slightly amid economic uncertainty.
Investment banking economist Silo Sekele. Silo, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Some bleak news that we're getting there out of that PMI. Could you just give an indication of the sentiments in the manufacturing industry in April and what that indicates for the economy?
Thanks, and afternoon to you and your listeners. The number is not a good reading, right? And you need to look at it in a context of, you know, a sector where it looks like output contracted in the first quarter of this year. And this is a sector where, you know, we saw employment rising in the fourth quarter of last year, some glimmer of hope, but it looks like really we are looking at a sector that's struggling here. And when you look at the underlying details, you see that the index declined in a quite broad-based manner, which is quite worrying. So what that possibly indicates, still early, but what it possibly indicates is that perhaps the weakness that we saw in Q1 in the sector has likely spilled over into the second quarter.
And Silo, help us understand, because inventories increased marginally.
At the same time,
how did then, that impact employment falling? Could you help us just understand that parallel?
Yeah, so the increase in inventories, it was quite a speculative move, right? According to what manufacturers are saying, they only increased inventories in anticipation of a lot of uncertainty, according to them. And then in terms of the employment index, look, any business, for it to increase payrolls, they have to be at least confident about the future, and the business should be doing well. But what we know about the manufacturing sector, at least from an APSA PMI perspective, is that business conditions have been quite challenging for about 6 months in a row. So that will definitely weigh on indicators such as the employment index.
Yeah, Silo, before I let you go, what does this indicate for the next 3 months or so? Of course, those global tariffs, we're still waiting it out to see what the next move will be from U.S. President Donald Trump. The rains also impacting businesses, and we're still quite, you know, seeing that heavy rainfall in South Africa. So this PMI giving us any indication for the next quarter or so?
Yeah, I think so. I think what the PMI is telling us is that, look, you're looking at a sector that's challenged by a lot of headwinds. And then perhaps we shouldn't be expecting to see a lot of robust growth in the next coming months, or let's say in Q2. But as I said, still early. This is just one print in Q2. So there's still a lot of numbers that are going to come in that will give us a better picture of what to expect in the sector and the.
All right. And lastly, internationally, is that the U.S. State Department says it is prioritizing consideration of for U.S. refugee resettlement of Afrikaners in South Africa who are victim of unjust racial discrimination. Now, they were responding to questions from SABC News seeking clarification about reports that the first group of Afrikaners refugees will be arriving in the United States as early as next week.
Targeting South Africa, and where a special Afrikaner refugee program first saw daylight was signed 3 months ago. What do we know at this point, and what has been the reaction from the South African government when it comes to this latest development?
It's certainly moving at a rapid clip, right? The President of the United States signed an executive order on February the 7th, and 3 months later, essentially to the day, we are now hearing that the first tranche of white Afrikaners will be arriving in Washington, D.C. at Dulles International Airport to be welcomed by State Department officials and Homeland Security officials, where we are told there will be a press conference to announce, the first success, if you will, since the initiation of this process. But understand, if we build on what Nick Harper has just been saying, the refugee admissions program in the United States has been suspended since January 20th. One of the first executive orders that Donald Trump signed there, even before the one titled "The Egregious Actions Against the Republic of South Africa," in terms of the egregious actions by the Republic of South Africa, which essentially mooted this refugee program for the first time. So they've moved here at a very, very rapid clip. We'll get the first tranche as early as Monday, early next week. And it really does raise questions about why Donald Trump has, in the broader context of shutting down the refugee program in the United States, has sought to prioritize the transmission of white Afrikaners from South Africa to the United States, based on the issues around South Africa's Land Expropriation Act. What we have also now heard is a very strong statement from the Department of International Relations. I think we have a clip from Crispin Peary, the spokesperson. Let's listen to what the South Africans are saying in reaction to these reports that the first Afrikaners will be arriving in the United States soon.
All right, on that, we are going to a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we will take you through the local updates.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, The Catholics Imaneka Karunga, The Africans Sing for Tierra, and many more.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, the time is 31 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Mornings Cube. Thank you so much for joining us once again. This is a show where we give you the economic news, trade news, the trade policy, all that, or entrepreneurship. We give you all that until the hour of 7:30. Now, to start off with one of the lead story in our newspaper today, please do not forget to subscribe, rather, to the WhatsApp channel. That is Eagle FM Media House. page, our channel, then of course you can able to get the newspaper every day. It's released, that's Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And to start off here is that the meat industry has been experiencing a notable downturn in the first quarter of 2025, with the livestock supply for slaughter and live export decreasing sharply as farmers focus on rebuilding their herds. Now, according to the Livestock and Livestock Products Board of Namibia, the sector is grappling with a shortage of market-ready animal across various channels, resulting in a notable drop in marketing figures for the quarter. Now, the board described the situation as a limited supply of raw materials, namely beef cattle and live animal, affecting both domestic processing and exports. Now, the sector now struggles with a limited supply of market-ready animal for various marketing channels. Now, the board reports in its 2025 first quarter commentary. Now, the shortage has affected the broader performance of Namibian's livestock industry. Now, one of the most critical components of the agriculture sector, disruption are several value chains. Now, as a result, all livestock sectors reported contractions during the quarter, except for the pig sector, while managed to post growth. Now, the tight supply has also driven up prices, and that what the board report shows, that the A grade beef cuts exceeded $70 per kilogram, an increase from the previous year when none surpassed $65 per kg. And the board statisticians, Francina Angola, reported that only 37,577 cattle were marketed in the first quarter of 2025, a drastic 58% drop from 89,507 cattle marketed in the same period in 2024. Now, Angola explained that the severe drought in 2024 has forced many farmers to sell off livestock, leading a major reduction in herd sizes. Following a good rain this year, grazing conditions have improved, and farmers are now focused on rebuilding rather than marketing livestock, resulting in the current supply shortfall. The live export, the largest segment of cattle marketing, have declined by a staggering 79.8%. Now, export improved, but was also saw a 24.2% drop in throughput. Now, local abattoirs slaughtered only 24,207 cattle, down from 31,945 in first quarter of 2024. Now, while export improved, abattoirs recorded a 22% decline in activity. Now, in the north region, abattoirs A, B, and C, only 2,780 cattle were slaughtered in the quarter. Now, the domestic abattoirs have been impacted by the downturn, and they have fared slightly better than livestock export. Now, the country exported only 13,371, that's now live cattle, in the first quarter, a sharp decline from 57,562 exported during the same period last year. Now, the reduced cattle supply has continued to push prices upward. Now, south of the veterinary cordon fence, the red line, B2 grade beef average, as that's now $69.89 per kg in the first quarter of 2025, while the and $9 per per kg, higher than in the same period last year. Now, Angola also cited an outbreak of lumpy skin disease in the south region, which also led to movement restrictions and further reduction the number of animals reaching auctions floors. Now, this pushed average weigh-in prices to $29.13 per kg, up to 17.7% from $24.75 per kg a year earlier. Now, in terms of beef export, volume declined significantly. Now only 1.4 million kg of beef were exported in the first and 3 months of 2025 compared to 2.9 million kg during the same period in 2024. Now, the European Union remains Namibia's top beef export destination, accounting for 84.2% of total export. Now, other key markets include Norway, which is now 10.2%, the UK 3.4%, China 1.7%, and South Africa 0.8%. Now, to move on to the next item is that the city of Windhoek handed over 14 vehicles and equipment valued at 9.7 million Namibian dollars to sister local authorities across Namibia on Friday. Now, the donation, the donated item includes tractors, buggies, skid tractor, standard tractors, portable steel flat tanks, and refuse remover lead loaders. Now, those resources aim to support service delivery in town that have signed memorandum of understanding with the city of Windhoek, including Okakarala, Rundu, Enana, Akorihas, Katima Morelo, Rehoboth, Ocho, and Gideon. Now, David Chombe got into the conversation with Benedicta Samian, who attended the event and helped us to unpack this development. And of course, what it means for the economic development of local authorities in the country.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at the local economic development. It was indicated that the city of Windhoek donated vehicles, equipment, and other relevant assistance to sister towns around Namibia. And to help us unpack this is my colleague Bernadette Simon, who was one of the journalists who attended the head of our events, just to help us unpack the motivation of this event, what really happened on Friday, and how the event contribute to economic development of the country and the way forward. Bernadette Simon, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, David, and thank you for having me.
Yes, we are very happy to have you here in the studio this morning. Let us look at the event which happened on Friday, particularly at the city of Windhoek. What was the aim of it, of the event? What really happened? What is the motivation of the donation? What is the content and the value of the donation?
Okay, thank you for the question. This event that took place at the city of Windhoek, it was all about the donations of some equipment and vehicles to different towns. So the aim is to support service delivery in towns that have signed a memorandum of understanding with the city of Windhoek, which is including Okakarala, Rundu, Enana, Korehas, Katima Molilo, Rehoboth, Ocho, Beseba, and Hibian. So over these 14 vehicles and equipment, the value was at 9.7 million to different local authorities across Namibia.
Yeah, you spoke about the donation to the towns that you have mentioned, and it's only the towns that signed the memorandum of understanding. Maybe what was the content of the leadership or the management of City of Windhoek, and how did they present what they give at that event, and how was the reaction of those who received?
Yeah. The mayor of City of Windhoek, Ms. Ndeshiafela Lalanje, she did reaffirm the city's commitment to strategic partnership, especially with other local authorities. So the city of Windhoek places high value on its relationship with sister local authorities because they believe that by working together and uplifting each other, they can achieve far more than they can alone.
Now, let us look at the reactions of those who received, and how are these things going to be utilized?
Thank you for the question again, David. So I remember one of the councillor of Hibian, Ellis Fredericks. He really showed his happiness for the donation of 3 vehicles that were donated to Hibian Village Council to the value of 1.5 million, which is really, he was really happy, or he really shows his gratitude for the donations that were given to his town.
Now, let us look at how are these vehicles going to be used, and when you look, what kind of vehicles were given, and how are these equipment going to be used in those different towns that you've mentioned?
Yeah. So, for the donation that were given to these several towns, I remember I spoke to one of the official members of City of Windhoek, Julia Wobert, and Miss Olivia.
Okay.
They really gave me more information about it, or they really showed me that about the vehicles that were donated there. They have been asking for more for so many years for people to help them, or maybe to donate some of vehicles that they can, just for them to uplift their towns when it comes to vehicles and some equipment.
Yeah.
But they really showed that it's from now on, they will continue with their hard working, and they can really help each other on doing these, especially those trucks that were given. I can mention the trucks that were given. Some of the donated items was included compactor trucks, buggies, skip trucks, standard trucks, portable steel float tanks, compressor, and refuse removal loaders.
Yeah, you mentioned that one of the towns which received donation from City of Windhoek is Gibeon, which is in the southern part of Namibia. In your view, what do you think is the necessity of assisting smaller towns to drive their development, and what example this is giving to other towns, particularly from City of Windhoek?
Yeah, I personally, I feel like this is extremely overwhelmed by this wonderful cases. And I know, because I know also the city, or let me say, I'm sorry, the councillor of Gibeon, he really showed his gratitude, that he really appreciate what was donated to his town. And this was Mr. Ellis Fredericks.
What lesson other town can learn from City of Windhoek when they donated to these small towns? What do you think they were going to learn from this assistance? What other towns can learn from this?
Yeah. For me, on what I think, or the idea I can give to different towns, so I feel like this is really a good example to another town, or to other towns.
Yeah.
I feel like they should also partake, or they must also take part in this, as City of Windhoek did to other towns, especially to those small towns that were really in need of these equipment, or in need of these vehicles. I feel like they also need to uplift themselves, or to uplift other towns or different towns, is for them to work together and make their towns memorable.
Lastly, is City of Windhoek is not is one of the best town, but it's not a great town. There are also some of the things that they are struggling to do in the town, particularly when it comes to housing and other things. What does it teach you to give, even if you are struggling? What lesson can we learn from this? You are giving to other, towns, but you're also struggling to give your people. What does this tell you? What are we learning from this, particularly in this very unfortunate, and unpredictable economy?
You know, David, in life, they said you must give.
Yeah.
Whenever you give, the more you receive. So I feel like even though I know these vehicles, they are not new. I know they were used by then. I feel like they are a lot. Imagine vehicles that cost a value of 9 point something million. It's really a huge amount of money. So I feel like I know, but I know the City of Windhoek don't really have any idea. Maybe other towns can do it to them also.
Yeah.
But I feel like
they must just be there.
Mm-hmm. So you're also supporting to say it's very good to assist somebody even if you are also struggling, because one day you are also going to be assistant.
Yes.
Or to keep that partnership.
Yes, they might just have that hope that one day something can be given to them.
Yes, maybe there's something which I left that you need to clarify, particularly when it's coming to what has happened on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you want to add?
No, for me, maybe I can just add up a little bit on this, or what really happened on Friday, especially to the donation of vehicles and some equipment. I remember these people were also given, especially the City of Windhoek members, they were also given some gifts, they were given some bags, some t-shirts.
Yeah, just gifts of appreciation.
Yeah, just the appreciation for them, just also to feel that, they.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, that was Bernadette Simon, one of the journalist who attended the City of Windhoek handing over of equipment, and she was unpacking to us what have happened, the necessity of supporting smaller towns in driving local economic development. And
and I hope they will continue with good gestures in future.
Thank you Bernadette, for being on the studio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, the time is 48 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that Tobias Hainyeko Constituency Youth Forum, in collaboration with Unongo Technologies, joined more than 80 youth in SMEs development, bookkeeping, financial planning, and funding of business. Now, David Jombe engaged with the chairperson of Tobias Hainyeko's Youth Forum, Wilka Kandeshi Elago, just to discuss this for us. We might take a lesson.
Yes, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at economic development. We are also looking at things which are uplifting the young people in Namibia. It was indicated that Tobias Hainyeko Constituency Youth Forum, in collaboration with Unongo Training CC, they hosted business training, and they trained around 80 young people in different capacities. However, this morning I got into the conversation with Wilka Kandeshi Elago. She's a chairperson of Tobias Hainyeko Constituency Youth Forum, and she is one of organizers of the event. Good morning, Wilka, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Mr. David Fono, Shombe. A very good morning to you as well.
Yes. We are very happy to have you this morning. Maybe just to give us a brief overview, what was the content of the event of business training? What was all about? What was the content of it? And how was the reaction from the young people and also those who trained?
Okay, so we hosted an event which was hosted on the 10th of May, and we hosted this event at Ohuye Pongo, which is our center within Tobias Hainyeko. So the event was actually a training of young people regarding business, whereby we wanted these young people to be trained on how exactly they need to know and what exactly is that they need to have when they are registering their businesses under the organization such as BIPA. And then we also catered for what exactly is that is the startup capital, or how do they earn, or how do they make startup capital within their businesses.
Yeah.
We also spoke of bookkeeping.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So this is a very important source within the business as well. As young people, sometimes we also figured out that we do have businesses, but we are not using really the right steps and the necessary needs that we have to go through for us to have our businesses as successful.
Yes. Let us look at the number of young people who showed up, and the facilitators also. How was the reaction of the young people who showed up, and what was their views? And also, maybe you talk a little bit about the trainer, and also what was given apart from the modules that you have said they were given?
Okay. So we have booked or we have registered about 80 young people within Tobia Sanyeko who attended this event. Yeah. And we're so proud enough that, yes, we trained 80 young youths who turned out now to attend this training.
Yeah.
The facilitator was, of course, part of Tobia Sanyeko as well,
yeah,
our sponsor. Mm. He is a business person as well that runs mostly graphic designs within the commerce region now, although he's based in Tobia Sanyeko.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a good thing him being a facilitator because he's already a specialist within this industry. So he knows exactly what business is, what are some of the struggles, and what are some of the things to be tackled as a young person, or how to make your business a successful one.
Yeah, yes. What are some of the costs involved? How was the fees, or was it just a good gesture to the young people?
Okay, as Tobia Sanyeko Youth Forum,
yeah,
we decided to place this on our annual year plan,
yeah,
to host this event,
yeah,
as our sponsor sponsored us this event for free.
Yeah.
Registration was for free. Every participant was granted a certificate, which they left with yesterday already.
Yeah.
They are outshining with their certificates.
Yeah.
And also, Tobia Sanyeko Youth Forum made sure that they provided a little as such as was a refreshment,
okay,
from our pockets that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really a good one, and we hope and wish that we host another similar event within Tobia Sanyeko,
yeah,
with a larger number.
Yes, that was great to look at the training you have been given to young people. Now, Wilka, you are a youth leader, and maybe apart from youth unemployment, what are some of the challenges that young people, particularly within the constituency that you are leading, are facing, and how do you think these challenges need to be addressed?
Okay. With my experience of what I have seen right now within our constituency or countrywide,
yeah,
I have seen that unemployment rate is one of the big issues that we are facing within,
yeah,
our areas.
Yeah.
And we would say we are really happy since we had our governor with us within today's event.
Yeah.
So the governor now have seen that, yes, of course, the youth are out there,
yeah,
and they are really ready to give an impact to the nation or give an impact to the society.
Mm-hmm.
So now I urge the young youth,
yeah,
follow youth, so to say that please visit offices when it's necessary.
Yeah.
It's never wrong for you to ask anyone.
Yeah.
It's never wrong or it's never late for you to approach a certain office.
Yeah.
Submit your necessary documents,
yeah,
at such places as probably NTA,
yeah.
Register your businesses, register your CVs with the Ministry of Labor,
yeah,
so to say that if anything come forth, then you are the people to be called, or the people who look up on us. It's also a good thing that we have to collaborate now as youth. We come together.
Yeah.
If now you are best at doing a certain trade, so to say, if you are a plumber and so,
yeah,
there is another neighbor of yours who is doing electrical, it's best you also trade,
yeah,
tenders.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to share with me the tender that you are good at. I share with you the tender that you are good at.
Yes. Looking at the area of collaboration, we have seen a lot of youth organization crashing, particularly when it's coming to, you know, youth development projects, and also people want to be the founder of different institutions. However, now let us look at collaboration. What other things need to be done in order to make sure that youth are together in this fight for economic development, this fight of against youth unemployment, and also again against other social ills? How can we foster this collaboration, particularly with the young people who seem not really united in these situations?
Okay, so it will really do, and it will be best if we really have to come forth,
yeah,
and consider communication as the key of success.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We need to use communication as a very important key, so to say that we involve the ministries.
Mm-hmm.
Once we tend to involve the ministries,
yeah,
and also seek for assistance from them,
yeah,
then the ministries will come forth for us. And also, we have to We have to ensure that we cry out for assistance at all time, because we are the ones that we need to be equipped, and also we need to ensure that we register our different vocational or institutes, so to say that we are on the safe side. Let's also not just fight for initiating or also just creating a lot of institutes within the constituencies or within the areas, but let's also see that yes, we are really outperforming. We are giving back. If now we create such an institute, do we know where we are already going to get internship for these certain people that we are taking?
Yes.
Or the business people that we have within our constituencies, what then forth can they assist us with? Can we take forth our students there and then we just say, no, they are, our students are here for as long as you assist them with internship, and then it will be fine for them, because now they end experience.
Yes, lastly, we have seen the governor was also present. He gave his, his speech, and he commented on the initiative. Looking forward, how do you think, looking at the new administration of Mwene Tumbona Ndindaitwah, how do you think you as a youth leader and also other youth leader can work best with the government in order to make sure that, you solve this, problems, or you assist in addressing the youth challenges? How are you seeing working best with government moving forward on?
I'm pleased and very happy with the leadership of our president, Mwene Tumbo. So in our future, or the way forward that I am seeing, is that we actually have the constituency councillor, which is the right office that we have to approach as our first doorstep. We always bring our problems within our councillor's office. The councillor sits with the CDC. The CDCs then decide on what exactly are the problems of the community, and then the councillor take it forth now to the right offices. Upon that, we also have a project such as IGO, and these projects always run almost every year. I urge the youth to also tend to be applying for such trainings, as it was also emphasized within the training. And also, this will also tend to help assist the right people within the constituency, and we also do not double assist the same people.
Okay.
If you benefit once, then that will be a good thing.
Okay, can you please emphasize on the program that you have mentioned? What do you call it?
Okay, so the program is called IGO. It happens, it happens every year, every, the start of the year, every beginning of the year. People have to register. The seller announced publicly via radio, via his office at the notice board, and then now it's you to apply for a certain project that you are best at. Let's say, for instance, I do.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
The program that you have mentioned, what do you call it?
Okay, so the program is called IGO. It happens, it happens every year, every the start of the year, every beginning of the year. People have to register. The councillor announced publicly via radio, via his office at the notice board, and then now it's you to apply for a certain project that you are best at. Let's say, for instance, I do catering. So I'm going to apply for catering, so the office of the councillor now can tend to fund me with probably serving dishes and also decorating stuffs, and so I tend to run my business as a caterer.
Yes, thank you very much, Weka Kandeshi, for joining us this morning, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fono.
And moving on to the next item is that the Namibia Statistic Agency International Trade Statistics Bulletin states that Namibia's export earnings for March 2025 stood at 10.1 billion Namibian dollars, reflecting a decrease of 0.4% compared to what was recorded in February 2025. Now, the import bill for March 2025 stand at 12.8 billion Namibian dollars, reflecting a worsened trade deficit of 2.7 billion Namibian dollars compared to the 2 billion Namibian dollars recorded in the February 2025. Now, to unpack this for us, we are joined by Tate Shyama, economic analyst. A very good morning to you, Mr. Shyama, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, Shimi.
Good. Thank you so much, Mr. Shyama. Yeah, I mean, looking at the trade deficit of 2.7 billion Namibian dollars, I mean, what does Namibia still have a trade deficit? What does it mean? How do we do now to improve this situation?
That is actually a very good question, but one has to think about is when you talk about trade deficit, so, trade deficit is actually okay, or when you import, more, whatever you export, or, you consume, you import more, compared to what you are exporting. Mm-hmm. And this is actually, it underscores a very, serious, what we call it, a structural challenges, as far as the trade deficit concern, and this actually creates the imbalances. So, and that is what we have seen, that there is increase in trade deficit. If you look at February compared to March, meaning that we actually consume more. The one also have to understand that the higher import. If you look very well what the Namibia Statistic Agent say, that okay, Namibia only tried to manage to export better. Let me use that word to Botswana. Mm. So, but when you look at South Africa, Namibia actually import a lot from South Africa, and that it has actually widened the trade deficit due to higher import and so on.
Why now does also the country have a trade deficit?
We import a lot compared to what, or in other words, it's like we sell less and we buy more in a layman language.
Oh, okay.
And there is no deterioration of what we call it merchandise trade deficit. And that is now, as we said, it has been driven by the increase in import payments and lower export, or we earn lower from our export, and so on. So because Namibia was actually heavily rely on the what we call mining, like diamonds and uranium, but we have seen that the uranium is start to decline, and when that start to decline, or the mine, most of the mining activities, when they start to decline, then obviously we start to earn less from our export market.
Now, Tate Shyama, looking at how we import more than export, obviously, what is maybe the impact of the trade deficit, or us now having to export more?
That is actually something which is very and many people they are concerned when as far as a trade deficit is concerned, because you allow your country to import more, and you are exporting less, and that it will actually create a problem of increase in trade deficit, and now that like the trade deficit so will become one of the major causes, and that it can actually lead to economic turn down, as I said, a trade deficit has the potential also to weaken your country currency.
So, what is your suggestion as an analyst on this? What should be done then to maintain the trade deficit?
Yes, For us to contain that trade deficit, what I think is that what Namibia has to do now, Namibia has to diversify its economy and export market. When I'm talking about diversifying, I'm talking about that, okay, you are not actually just exporting to USA. For instance, we know now, like in this case, there is what we call it tariff war and there is also the uncertainty of AGOA and so on. Now, what will happen is that Namibia have to diversify the export market in the sense of that, okay, you are also exporting to USA, you are also exporting to what we call it, to EU, you are also exporting to China, for instance, so that you start to diversify your export market. And also the other problem that we had is that Namibia need to move away from the reliance on the, what you call it, the primary commodities when we export, like the minerals and so on. And that, without diversification, Namibia, it will actually be difficult for us actually to net a surplus at the end of the day. And also something that I can also maybe add is that if we start to diversify, especially when it comes to export market, so because if we heavily relied on one country, so and now global is fragile. One can say that that we have seen that the geopolitics in Russia and Ukraine, they teach us a lesson. So, and that is why diversification will actually mitigate the alienation with a global price fluctuation, and also it can also increase or boost our economy. So that is very, very important for Namibia now. And the other thing, one of my articles that I just released this week was speaking about the FDI. So now, for Namibia, because sometimes, especially, it can also be impact. So the FDI is foreign direct investment.
Okay.
So and we have to enable our investors. So who will come and invest with Namibia. So and we need now to create a conducive environment and also to give them the benefit. So because nobody will actually establish a plant, especially now if you look at what our president wants. President wants that the investors, they need to establish the plant. That is actual now, or also just to produce things just inside in Namibia. So instead of always just exporting the raw materials and so on, but you have to sacrifice. So, and because the investors need to be sure that, okay, my investment that I'm going to make with the country, it will not, so I will not lose my investment and so on. As I said previously, that that is a challenge for our country now. And what I think is that we need really just to look at our trade policies and try to reform so that we can actually create that conducive business environment for the investors. You see, we are living in what we call it the global village. And all the economy, they are actually intertwined. They joined together. So, and that is why what is important is that, we also have to take care of our own economy. And that is why I'm saying that, I strongly recommend that, Namibia also need, to encourage the entrepreneurs. So there are some of the products that we use to import from South Africa or from other countries that Namibians, they can actually do it right here in Namibia. So, and now the challenge will be, how will the, SME access funding, for instance? So that is the question that we need to ask ourselves. So that how we are going to empower our entrepreneurs and not only the upcoming entrepreneurs, we also have to look at the existing business. So how can we help them, for instance? So can we assist them maybe, or the government can go to the business communities or and say, okay, you are running this business, but I can see that, okay, this business has the potential also to cap or to limit the import. So then obvious maybe that business might only need some equipment or some machineries so that they can start to produce locally. And also when you produce a lot, we can also start to export. And mm-hmm. by doing that, especially when it comes to food and agriculture, so we have a plant of land, we have irrigation green schemes, mm-hmm. and we can also look at the example of what Burkina Faso is actually doing now right away. Mm-hmm. So that's the things that our leaders, they need to explore. And they need to create that certainty for investors. And when I'm saying investors, I'm not referring only to FGO, the guys outside. Okay. I'm referring to the local community as well. So let us create that conducive environment. Let us create that a positive and effective tripolis so that at the end of the day, we attract people to invest in Namibia. At the end of the day, they establish the processing center here in Namibia, and obvious, we will start to export and we'll also earn enough and keep import.
Thank you so much, yeah. Mr. Sharma, for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. The time is 14 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Namibia ranked 136 on the 2025 Global Human Development Index, that is HDI, out of 193 countries assessed. Now, the HDI is a composite index that measures the average achievement in three basic dimensions of human development, that is along and health, life, knowledge, and a decent standard of living. Now, Namibia's position has not moved since 2023, as it has made no major moves. Now, the first 20 spots of the HDI have no African nations in the, and then they're dominated by Western European and three Asian nationals, or rather territories. Now that is now Hong Kong of China, Singapore, and the Republic of Korea. Nations from the other zones are the United States, and United Arab Emirates, and Australia. Now, the largest report of human development that was released last week by the UN Development Program, that is UNDP, highlighted that the fears that persist around the development of rollout of artificial intelligence system around the world have many people worried about the continuous development pathways for many populations. Now, Namibia is classified in the medium development ranking in the world at the position of 136. Namibians earn an average of 199,235 per annum, which is also tied to the national domestic product. Now, in this placement, the latest report notes that the country has achieved an average life expectancy of 67.4 years, and the most alarming dimension in the average schooling period that Namibians are expected to participate in. Now, the expected tally is at 11.8 years of schooling. Now, suppose the stark reality from the recently recently released a Labour for Survey report of 2023, a census report wherein it was also revealed that the most commonly obtained and highest level of education for Namibians in the working age population was that of secondary school. Now, the real average tally of Namibians in school is at 7.3 years, and the 2023 Labour Force Survey by the Namibian Statistics Agency outlined the various features of the 1.8 million Namibians who are within the working group. And now the working group is measured from the 15 to 59 age group level across the employed or potentially employed labor spectrum. Now, one such key feature is the level of educational attainment within the bracket of employed Namibians, which is only 546,805 from 1.8 million. Translating to 30% of this subtotal of the 3 million Namibians, as the census report revealed. Now, the NSA note in the report that education does have an effect on the job prospects of individuals. Now, Namibian's growth in the HDI has been measured since independence by the UNDP, and it has shown positive growth through small during the course of the 35 years roadmap. Now, since 1990, Namibia has made small growth in HDI. Now, according to the report from 1990 to 2000, the growth was at 0.62% from 2000 to 2010. Now, it reversed dramatically to a positive indicator of 0.52%, and from 2010 to 2023, it grew by 0.91%. of growth. Now, the overall average growth trend is a positive indicator of 0.33% since independence. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Namibia Sport Commission, NSC, hosted a meet and greet last week, weekend, with the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth Sports, Arts and Culture, and various sports federation representatives at the Palm Oliva Hotel in Windhoek. Now, the Education and Sport Minister, Senator Steenkamp, and Deputy Minister Dino Barotti were in attendance to engage with the federations on various issues affecting the sports sector. Now, those are on task exemptions for federations, sport visitor visas from athletes and coaches, transport assistance, registration of the sport courts, even hosting protocols, the Namibian podium performance program, the NDP6, the sport management data system, and the national colors guide. Now, on this, we can take a listen to what the minister has said on this ceremony.
The registered sports bodies, which I saw now was 46, and the 8 national umbrella bodies, the boards, the council that was set up, you are all part. And I'm happy to see that all of you are here, because this to me is an inclusive approach that really reaffirms our collective responsibility to ensure that we work together at all levels towards a more integrated and professional sports environment. Allow me to take this moment to really express my gratitude to the Directorate of Sports, the Namibia Sports Commission, and of course all the boards, all the umbrella board bodies, the federations, the associations, and importantly, the many volunteers who sometimes go unnoticed. To fostering unity, transparency, and accountability. And this to me are not merely words. I want to make that very clear, ladies and gentlemen. These are not words to me. Transparency and accountability, adherence to good governance principles in all federations operations. That's important. You know where you stand, you know what you want to improve. And the 2019 Maseru resolution reminds us all of the critical importance of maintaining clear mandates while supporting each other's functions. We should not be competing with each other. There's no need. You have a unique mandate. Make the best of that. So we must avoid duplication of roles and strengthen our coordination if we wish to deliver results and maintain institutional integrity. And I don't want to get into a sermon, but the word integrity is also of late very loosely being used by people who have no integrity in mind. And I really want to urge us to serve with integrity. In addition, it's important for federations to align their strategic planning with our national sports policies and regulations. Furthermore, it becomes imperative to encourage democratic processes with federations that give athletes a voice and a strong sense of agency. Our athletes need to know that they need to be developed on so many aspects. How do I work with confidence? How do I make eye contact? How do I respect different cultures where I'm going to? How do we prepare them, not just physically, but also psychologically? Emotional maturity, intelligence. Because we know we come from different backgrounds. So it's not just about nurturing the talent. It's about nurturing the human being and putting the face of humanity first in our federations. Our teams have said it already. The sports sector landscape, we should function in harmony. Government sets policies, provides financial resources, and creates enabling environments through infrastructure, while committing to continued support to federation development. Our public enterprises under the ministry carry out regulatory responsibilities, and our Olympic and Paralympic committees ensure Team Namibia's participation at global events. And federations and associations remain the engines of grassroots and elite level sport development. Our public enterprises and the respective boards are equally urged. It's my first remarks, so I only urge today to uphold principles of corporate governance and respect institutional roles and contribute constructively to our shared mission.
All right, there you have it. The time is 24 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and it's early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the sustainable economic transformation in Namibia is only possible if the country cultivates a supportive environment for entrepreneurs, according to the Namibia Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And in a statement issued to announce the Chamber's Northern Region Branch Leadership Election, NCCR Chief Executive Officer Titus Nampala stated that Namibia's economic transformation depends on cultivating a healthy entrepreneurship ecosystem. Now, he stressed the importance of creating an environment that enables entrepreneurs to innovate, add value, and scale their ventures. Now, this ecosystem must be underpinned by supportive policies, laws, bylaws, financial systems, and other enabling mechanisms. That was Nampala said. Now, he further underscored the need for entrepreneurship communities to remain proactive and united in advocating for environment they need to thrive. Organized business structures like NCCI branches are essential for shaping policy, fostering innovation, and improving local investment conditions. That's what he adds. Now, in March this year, NCCI officially launched its nationwide branch leadership election to re-establish local executive committees and strengthen the voice of the private sectors across the country. Now, after several years without formal branch leadership structures, three excos has become a priority for Nampala. Now the initiative aims to enhance business advocacy and engagement at the local level. Now the election process began on 17 April 2025 in the northern region, covering 18 towns and village councils. Now the chamber visited those areas to engage entrepreneurs, explain in its mandate and facilitate preparation for branch level annual general meetings. Now to date, 7 branches, Rakana, Oshakati, Ongodiva, Ondangwa, Helaona Fiti, Enana and Okongo have successfully elected new executive committees. Now the ECO comprises 5 to 7 local business leaders and is tasked with representing the interest of the business community, advocating for enabling policies and participating in critical decision-making platforms. Now, on that, each committee also includes presentations from micro entrepreneurs to ensure inclusive participation. Now, this move, according to the Jemper, it reflects an acknowledgement that Namibia's economic is significantly driven by informal traders and vendors who play a crucial role in distributing goods and services across the diverse population group. Now, those entrepreneurs diverse recognition and support for their resilience and contribution. Now with the right backing, they can grow and transition into the formal economy, that what the chamber noted. Now on that, the remaining branch election are expected to take place in the coming weeks, with updated schedules for the east, south and central region, including Hobabis and Wavesby, where election have already been completed to be announced soon. Now, Swakop is also set to elect its ECOS later this month. Now, Nampala called on local and political leaders to collaborate with the newly elected business representative to build the necessary infrastructure and condition for a resilient, inclusive and dynamic entrepreneurship ecosystem. Now there you have it. That was the last episode of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in today's Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much, and please don't forget to tune into the next programs. I'm picking off the day. So please don't also forget to visit our platform. You can find Namibia Funders on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Eagle FM channel, that is Eagle FM Media House, so that you can always be informed. And also wherever you go, you can able to tune in to the podcast, and that you can only do when you subscribe or rather download our app, that is Eagle FM app. You'll find that on your Google Play Store and of course your App Store. Thank you so much for joining us today, and for that said, thank you so much.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
I'm only human, a flesh and blood, I'm made.
Did you know that 1 in 4 road deaths involves a pedestrian or cyclist? This UN Global Road Safety Week, play your part in making walking and cycling safer for everyone. Look out for our vulnerable road users. Be alert and be responsible. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba. that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, Rio Sherero o Maimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-235-8063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandisoma yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Ikelefe Media House. Ngoe tuende pimeneha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, kodara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oni aji. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.5.